I'd like to call the committee to order, and we do have a quorum present. And do we have a motion to approve the minutes of March 19th? Representative Loeffler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd be glad to move the minutes of March 19th.
All right. Thank you. Is there any discussion to the minutes? All right. Seeing none, all in favor of approving the minutes of March 19th, please say aye.
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 Opposed, no. Motion prevails, and the minutes are approved. So, members, we had hoped to take up for the first thing on the agenda to be Representative Allen's bill, but I guess we've got a little scheduling confusion here, so we're going to go ahead and move to Representative Murphy's bill, House File 214. And I know that we had hoped to take care of Representative Allen's bill first, because I know we have some folks here who've come from a long ways, and we'd like to get them in and out. So what I would propose here, I expect Representative Murphy's bill will take a lot more time, and there are a number of testifiers. If we can, and if it looks like we won't be able to finish with Representative Murphy's bill, what we may do is just lay that aside temporarily, take up Representative Allen's bill so that we can get her testifiers on the road before this evening, just to try to accommodate them. But in the meantime, Representative Murphy. Representative Murphy, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. It's good to see you. And it's good to be in room 200. And I thought about bringing candy to soften you up a little bit, but we spent a little more time on the floor than I anticipated, so I'm going to move right on to the bill. Thank you for having me today and for hearing House File 214, which is a modernization of the Minnesota CARE law that has been in place in Minnesota since 1992.
Representative Murphy, before you go any further, I want to move your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
So I will move Representative Murphy's bill. I move that House File 214 be recommended to pass and be referred to the Committee on Health and Human Services Finance. And then, Representative Murphy, you have an author's amendment. Is that something you'd like to put on right away so that you can discuss it in the shape that you want to have it?
Yes, Madam Chair.
All right. So I will move the A4 amendment to get the bill in the shape in which the author would like it. And then,
Madam Chair?
Oh, I'm sorry. Apparently, I'm moving the wrong thing. Members, we have
the DE3 might be more.
DE3 that
might be the right
should be
step
in your packets. Does everybody have that? So if we're going to first move the DE3 to get it, the bill in the shape in which the author would like to discuss it, all those in favor of the DE3, please say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, no. Motion prevails. So we have the DE3 before us, and then we need to, and then you've got the A4 amendment, I understand, Representative Murphy. So I will move the A4, and again, that is just an author's amendment, and then we'll go through what the bill does. So all in favor of the A4 amendment, please say aye.
Madam Chair.
Oh, Representative Murphy.
Madam Chair, I think the technical amendment that I would like you to consider is the A3.
Okay. Mr. Chun, maybe you could give us a little explanation here.
Madam Chair and Representative Murphy, the A3 technical amendment, that language is in the A4 amendment. So.
Thank you.
Okay. So with that, I will move the A4 amendment. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, no. Motion prevails. So now we have we're working off the DE3 with the A4 amendment in it. So, Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. There are three other amendments, as I understand, that I have seen to the DE3, each dealing with county-based purchasing. And if it would please the committee, I think I would prefer to move forward with the presentation of the bill and the testimony and have the amendments taken up afterwards. And further, I think it would be important for the committee to consider these three amendments. There is some friendly disagreement among some of the parties And I think that it would be important that the committee understand that while I think it is important to cover these, we need to talk about these issues, that if they're adopted today, there will need to be further discussion between now and the Health and Human Services Finance Committee to resolve some of the differences. And I would leave action on that to your discretion.
Well, sure, Representative Murphy, let's go ahead and discuss the bill in which the author wants to discuss it, and then later on we'll take up the amendments.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. House File 214 is a modernization of the Minnesota Care Law that has been in place since 1991 in Minnesota. And I just want to tell you that as a much younger nurse and lobbyist and organizer, I was in my early career in Minnesota able to participate in the passage of Minnesota Care. And it was a very a powerful experience for me, not only in understanding how public policy can come together, but to also understand how state leaders can work together to solve a problem despite partisan differences. And people in the room and those who came before us, I think, often look back to the work that was done around Minnesota Care, and it was multiple years of work. Representative Loeffler was a part of that. She's here. Representative Berglund was a part of that, and she's still working in health policy. There were many members who were involved in that process over a number of years to try and solve a problem of making sure people who are working but don't have access to affordable health coverage got coverage through subsidized insurance. And Minnesota Care, as a program, has served Minnesotans well. Since that time, there have been substantial changes to the law since it was first adopted. I think often in a response to financial difficulties that the state was experiencing, but it continues to serve a population of people. It was a well-drafted piece of policy. And I think there are, you know, many people who have had access to health coverage as a result of that policy that was put in place in the early 1990s. With the passage of the Affordable Care Act and the changes that we're seeing across the country in terms of coverage, Minnesota Care's future is in doubt. And I think it is important for us to assure that Minnesota Care goes forward while taking advantage of some of the provisions of the Affordable Care Act. And the proposal before you seeks to accomplish that goal, to modernize Minnesota Care, to make it comport with the law going forward, both federal law and state law, and to maintain the commitment we have to people who are working but don't have access to affordable health care coverage, so that they're able to continue in their work, get the health care that they need for themselves and their family, and assuring that it's affordable. This is a work in progress, although I will tell you we started working on this, I think, back in August. We've had really great support from a number of people with expertise in healthcare and a lot of support from the administration, both technical and otherwise. And I'm really pleased that Commissioner Jessen is here with us today so she can share with you the work that's been happening on behalf of the administration with CMS at the federal government level and their perspective on this piece of legislation. Thank you, Madam Chair and members.
Thank you. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I'm Lucinda Jessen, Commissioner of the Minnesota Department of Human Services, and I'm just here to express my strong support and the Governor's support for continuing and improving our Minnesota Care program. As Representative Murphy mentioned, this has been so valuable to so many of our citizens in the past. It's provided coverage on using sliding scale premiums to many working poor families. We cover about 130,000 people in our state on Minnesota Care today. And really a lot of what we do here in Minnesota through Minnesota Care, I think, is what the federal government through the Affordable Care Act was trying to do. It was one of those, I think, many instances where we are ahead of the federal government. But I think we also have to recognize some challenges and need to improve this. There are many eligible who do not sign up today. There are some affordability gaps, and there's a hospital cap that we do think it is important to remove. But I think fundamentally we need to continue this program. That while many of the people served by Minnesota Care today will be covered by Medicaid, those after the Medicaid expansion that the legislature passed and the governor signed, those below 138% of the poverty level, and just for those of us in the real world, that's $15,000 a year for a single adult. So people below that will be covered mostly by Medicaid. It is really this population between 138% and 200% of the poverty level So for single adults, between $15,000 a year and about $23,000 a year, that where the state has real choices. For other states, the easy thing is to put those people in the exchange and to have them be able to get the federal subsidies to purchase health insurance there. While the Affordable Care Act moves our state forward in many respects, I think for this population, it would be a step backwards to move away from our state-based program for these working poor adults. And that's why I think we really need to continue Minnesota Care and provide care to this population the way we have in the past, with some improvements. Let me just go through reasons why I think that is valuable. First, people will be better off, and I think that is really important. We have what we think is slightly better coverage. We include the model mental health benefit set in some other ways. We provide coverage through Minnesota Care today that I think will be better for this population that has, a lot of them have mental health and chemical dependency problems. It will be better for people because the premiums are on Minnesota Care today are overall more affordable than the costs that they would pay in the exchange, and I think those costs would lead not only to more medical debt for this population, but to a lot of uncompensated care for providers. There is a one-year funding challenge. There is, and many of you all are aware of that, because the opportunity that we can take advantage of is what they call basic health plan funding, kind of where a state under the Affordable Care Act has the ability to go to the federal government and say, give us 95% of the dollars you pay in the exchange for this population, and we will cover them. And that is funding that, on a bipartisan basis, we have pressed hard for the federal government to be able to access that funding to continue our state-based program. And I think that, but for Minnesota, the federal government probably still wouldn't have issued guidance saying when that funding would be available. They had made it clear it will be available in January 2015, and with that funding, we project it will cover, the vast majority, of cost that and the premiums of Minnesota Care, we think between 90 and 95% as we move forward. But we have a challenge in the calendar year of 2014. I have received a letter, actually, just in the last few days from CMS that said they will continue to pay 50% of the cost in 2014 for this program, which would be a bridge until we are able to get that basic health plan funding, which would cover almost all of the cost of the program. So what we have, and I know this is the policy committee, but Representative Murphy asked me for an update of our conversations with CMS. I wanted to provide that. So I think one of the advantage reasons that Minnesota Care going forward is such a value proposition is that while we have this one-year funding challenge, the bottom line is amazingly good in the future with BHP funding. Then in the next biennium, it would save, and that's in the governor's proposed budget, over $400 million. So this, in the long term, we think, is a really good thing financially for the state as well. And we think that having an ongoing Minnesota Care program that we own, that we control, with flexibility from the federal government, it gives us that platform for continued change, for Minnesota to be a leader, where we're in having kind of that leadership role in our public programs going forward. So with that, Madam Chair, I'm happy to answer any questions and just once again want to reiterate that continuing Minnesota Care is in the governor's supplemental budget. It is a priority for us as well.
All right. Thank you, Commissioner. And I do have a number of members on the list for questions. And members, if these questions are to the commissioner, we could ask them now. But we do also have a number of other testifiers on the list. So if they're to the commissioner, we by all means want to ask them while she's here. So Representative Grunhagen.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. Thanks for your testimony, Commissioner. Yeah. How would the residency require? I'm just, with federal residency, do you have the intent? Because current Minnesota Care, my understanding, you have to be a resident of the state of Minnesota, not just intent. Or can you just explain how, is there a conflict there or how that's going to work?
Commissioner.
Madam Chair, Representative Grunhagen. Actually, two years ago, when we were able to receive a federal match, the 50% match of for Minnesota Care, which is brought in about $160 million additional federal dollars to support this program. We did have to change the residency requirements to conform with the federal requirements. We asked at the legislature's direction for permission not to have to make those changes, but to, in order to get that money, we did have to make those changes.
Okay, thank you, Madam
Representative
Chair.
Representative Grunhagen.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. Then when this transfers into the exchange, are the individuals currently insured, are they going to have to fill out the a long application again to re-enroll inside the exchange in the Minnesota Care Program?
Mr. Jessen.
Madam Chair, Representative, the way this was worked would people would go to the exchange, put in the information, and be able to find out if they were eligible either for Medicaid or Minnesota Care and enroll in that same process. Okay. So the enrollment would be through the exchange, but then they would be in Minnesota Care as opposed to picking commercial products with subsidies.
Madam Chair.
Representative Grunhagen.
Thank you. So my understanding is they'll have to re-enroll. They'll get a letter of termination with their current Minnesota Care plan, and is that correct, or did I misunderstand you?
Mr. Jessen.
Madam Chair, Representative, thank you for clarifying that. We do not plan to make our current Minnesota Care enrollees have to re-enroll. We'd be transferring those, okay. But there would be an opportunity. There are a lot of people who are eligible for Minnesota Care today who are not enrolled, and so that they would have that opportunity to do that through the exchange.
Okay, Representative Franson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Commissioner Jessen, I'm hearing that, and then I'd like you just to explain in detail here, what I'm hearing is that Minnesota Care will provide better coverage than the commercial products in the exchange, that those that will no longer have insurance because of the 30-hour work week provision are going to have to purchase the commercial products in the exchange with the subsidies. But I'm hearing that Minnesota Care will provide better coverage than that. Could you explain how that is going to happen and why?
Commissioner Jessen.
Madam Chair, Representative Franson, I think the major difference will be out of pockets, that these working poor adults will not have to pay as much out of pockets as they would in exchange. The product that would be cheapest for them in exchange would be the bronze product, where there would not be a premium, but it's a high deductible health plan where they would be a lot more out of pockets. So I think that Minnesota Care will be more affordable. I did say you're correct that I think Minnesota Care has a slightly better benefit set. It's a little more tailored to the needs of this population. When the Health Reform Task Force looked at this last year, one of the things they concluded was that because of some of the access to mental health services, particularly that we have through Minnesota Care, that would be a better fit for this population. But as I said, the biggest change will be in the out-of-pockets, that we think they'll have to pay less, and with a little more affordable health care, that more people will be able to access it.
Representative Franson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Commissioner Jessen, thanks for that answer. Say, now, the benefit set not available in the exchange, besides mental health not being available, what else will not be available in the exchange that Minnesota Care will have access to?
Commissioner Jessen.
Madam Chair, Representative, I certainly didn't mean to imply that mental health services wouldn't be available through commercial products in exchange. I certainly didn't mean to say that. I just pointed to that as a difference where I think we have a more fully developed mental health benefit set that the legislature passed as part of the model mental health benefit set than is often found in the commercial market. I see that as a slight difference. But once again, I'm not trying to say that there will be major benefit distinctions between our Minnesota Care benefit set and what would be available in a commercial product.
Okay. Representative Mack.
Thank you, Madam Chair. To the commissioner, just looking for clarification, I think in your testimony, and what I've understood until looking here at the DE3, that this would cover those from 133% up to 200% of federal poverty, and I understood that anything higher prior to this in conversations, that anything higher to that was concerning in terms of financial implications for the state. And I know this isn't the Finance Committee, so we don't have to get into that, but I'm just wondering, I'm reading in the bill, this is up to 275. So did that just recently change? I'm just looking for clarification. I thought it was only up to 200%, and that's what the numbers were based off of.
Commissioner Jessen.
Madam Chair, Representative Mack, thank you for asking that question. When I talked about the population covered, I was talking about the population covered between 138 and 200% of the poverty level that is in the governor's proposed budget. And we certainly intend to support the idea of looking and seeing what should be done for adults between 200 and 275 that are served in Minnesota Care today. From the governor's budget perspective, you know, we did not believe that that was something, given that we have to pay for 50% of this in 2014, that was affordable this year. But certainly would like to study that going forward. Under the governor's proposed budget, which is we proposed moving the children from Minnesota Care to Medicaid.
Okay, Madam Chair.
Representative Mack.
So, and currently, is Minnesota Care up to 200%? Is my memory serving me correctly, or is it higher than that? I just can't remember.
Commissioner Jessen.
Madam Chair, Representative Mack. Today, Minnesota Care, remember, there's sliding scale premiums, and those sliding scale premiums are available to adults, depending upon whether their parents or single adults, up to either 250 or 275. So today in Minnesota Care, we have about 4,000, I believe it is, single adults that pay their premiums and are part of Minnesota Care that are over 200% of the poverty level, and about 5,000 parents. But I certainly would refer to, you know, any questions. I don't mean to be answering questions about your bill, Representative Murphy, that are inconsistent with the governor's proposed budget.
Okay.
Representative Mack.
Just a comment, then one quick follow-up is, maybe between here and finance, and maybe I'll follow up with you too, Commissioner, just on some of the things that I've understood up to this point, the concerns of going above that 200%, and when we've just enacted the exchange, and that obviously has subsidies and credits available for people up to 400% of federal poverty guideline. I guess I'm just concerned about the wisdom in expanding it up to 275 and the financial implications for that. So I'd love to have that conversation, maybe have that comparison in front of us in the Finance Committee. And then my very last question for you, Commissioner, was from your conversations with the federal government, do you sense that this is something that a waiver that is they're going to be amenable to, that this is going to be something, I don't know if you can speak to that or not, but just to shed some light in terms of where those conversations are at with the federal government. I understand that you just got the letter from CMS at the 50-50 level. Does that pretty much mean that if this goes through, that waiver will be accepted by the federal government?
Commissioner.
Madam Chair, Representative Mack. The letter really refers to what would happen in 2014, what the federal government would be willing to commit to at the 50%, you know, the continued 50% rate. The letter gives caveats like, you know, we'd have to negotiate, and there's a final, resolution. There are things that, like, we would have to remove the hospital cap. So there's some caveats, but I think it was a very strong letter. It certainly convinced our management and budget department that they could book this. And I feel that I feel very confident of the ability. The secretary spoke directly with the governor and me about having BHP funding available in January 2015. So I feel as confident as one can about that as well.
Okay, thank you.
And Madam Chair?
Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Chair Liebling and Representative Mack, to the bill itself. And as you can hear from the Commissioner, there is a continuing conversation ensuing with CMS. And the bill, as it's drafted, does make reference to eligibility up to 275% of federal poverty. But I think that it's important for me to acknowledge on the record that as this proceeds forward to the Finance Committee and as we see the cost implications with a fiscal note that's final, I understand that it will be up to the committee, the Finance Committee, to take a look at this and to make sure that we are moving the legislation forward in a way that is both effective for Minnesotans and their coverage, but also affordable for the state of Minnesota.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Murphy. Representative Mallory.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Commissioner. There's an issue I was working with way back to when I started in 97. A lot of women, when they get divorced, are not making a lot of money, and they get COBRA for a certain number of months. Then they fall off of the COBRA, and there's a four-month wait that we always had. And I actually fixed that, and the conference committee agreed to it in 2008, and the staff person left it out of the conference report, so it never got fixed in law, and I've tried several times since then. It looks to me like this solves that problem at least up to 200%. Are they still in problems over up between 2 and 275 then, or is it fixed partly and not fixed partly, or what's the answer?
Commissioner?
Madam Chair, Representative Mulroy. I think the good news, and thank you for reminding me of this, is that this bill would fix that problem. And it's in the governor's fixing that's in the governor's proposed budget as well. So there would no longer be a four-month waiting period for people in Minnesota Care. I think that for people in the exchange, there one of the reforms that's required by federal law is a guaranteed issue. So that takes will help take care of that for people who aren't in Minnesota Care as well.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you, Representative Abler.
Thanks, Madam Chair. This is something I think we have to do. I think if the gavels were changed, we'd still be having some kind of bill like this. I think it's worthy and productive. I'm kind of reading the bill. There's 2014 and the 2015. And so just 2014 is Minnesota Care. 2015 is a basic health plan. Is that what you're, that's my first question.
Commissioner
just to
Jackson.
Clarify.
Madam Chair, Representative Abler. From my perspective, this is all about Minnesota Care. This is Minnesota Care continuing it and improving it going forward. What the basic health plan funding, it's really just another way to get dollars, more dollars, to fund what we're already doing. And so that at least is the way I'm looking at it.
Okay.
Madam Chair.
Okay, ditto. Representative Murphy.
Thank you. I feel the same.
Okay.
All right.
Representative Abler.
Once so then in 2015 we'll get basic health plan dollars to do this. Okay. And just I have two more questions. On page 8.1, it talks about a loss ratio in 2015 of 85%. I thought we were proud of pushing our providers to better than that. We talk about 6% and all that. Can you comment about what that's about?
Madam Chair, Representative Abler, we are working to match the loss ratio that is embedded in the Affordable Care Act.
Yeah.
Madam Chair.
Representative Abler.
But why wouldn't we be happy to match the loss ratio we demand of our PMAP providers now?
Madam Chair and Representative Abler, I would be happy to talk with you about that.
See, we've changed sides here in the last couple of days. and then to my last question.
Abler, I don't think we've changed sides at all. We've always worked well together.
I mean,
Representative Abler.
Never mind, yeah. Fair enough. And then the last thing, on page 14, you talk about rate increases for providers, and is that a scalable number to burn up all the available money in the Healthcare Access Fund, or is that, do you have a number in mind that you're thinking?
Representative Murphy.
Madam Chair and Representative Abler, I think that is the subject of further discussion. In reflection, you know, the committee members, previous legislatures and providers have expressed a lot of concern about provider rates in our public programs, and so we should consider that a discussion open for you and me and others in the committee.
And Madam Chair.
All right, Representative
Abler. I think people should notice that the majority leader has given the providers a blank check. So the number's unfilled in, so there you go. Just kidding. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative Abler. okay, we have other testifiers. So let's see. We have Christina Wessel. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Christina Wessel, and I'm the Deputy Director of the Minnesota Budget Project. We are an initiative of the Minnesota Council of Nonprofits, and we provide research, analysis, and advocacy on tax and budget issues that impact low and moderate income families. This afternoon, I'm here representing 49 organizations that would like to express our support for the goals of House File 214, and there's a letter in your packet from our organizations. We believe that it is vital that we preserve and improve Minnesota care for our low and moderate income working families, rather than having this population purchase private insurance through the exchange. And there's several reasons. First, House File 214 creates a more affordable option for these families.
Even with the help of federal tax credits, current Minnesota Care premiums are lower than premiums will be in the exchange. However, even these lower Minnesota Care premiums are still a serious barrier to enrollment for many individuals. So we encourage you to look at reducing premiums for enrollees beginning in 2014, and we strongly support the provision in the House file that eliminates premiums beginning in 2015. Second, House File 214 removes the risk of increased tax liability. A family enrolled in private health insurance through the exchange could find themselves liable for repaying premium tax credits if their income increases. A surprise tax bill of $1,000 for a farming family that had a good year is not an outcome that any of us would like to see. By preserving Minnesota Care, this bill could eliminate the tax risk for these families. Third, preserving Minnesota Care will result in better health outcomes, less medical debt, and higher levels of compensated care. If these Minnesotans purchase private insurance through the exchange, there is a real danger that they will opt for a zero premium plan, as Commissioner Jessen mentioned, with high out-of-pocket costs, essentially leaving them underinsured. An underinsured individual is less likely to seek appropriate care and is less likely to be able to afford to pay the bill when they ultimately do require health care. This bill eliminates that risk by providing meaningful insurance, making meaningful insurance coverage affordable. And we also support House File 214 because it will maximize federal funding. The bill utilizes the basic health plan option, funding that will be available beginning in 2015, bringing in as much as $900 million a year to our state for health care. In the meantime, the bill uses a combination of state funding and federal matching dollars to maintain Minnesota Care through 2014. It is vital that we use all available resources to avoid interrupting access to Minnesota Care for these families. And finally, House File 214 seeks to preserve Minnesota Care for everyone. Federal basic health plan funding is only available for individuals from 138 to 200% of the federal poverty level. We support the instructions in the House file that seek federal funding to provide meaningful and affordable health insurance for all those currently eligible for Minnesota Care, including those over 200% of the federal poverty level. So on behalf of our 49 organizations, I urge you to support this House file because it eliminates the uncertainty facing tens of thousands of Minnesotans and continues our tradition of leadership and innovation in health care. We thank Majority Leader Murphy for championing this issue. It is really critical that Minnesota commits to an improved Minnesota Care now so that this program can be part of the state's health insurance exchange from its inception. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And I have a couple of members on the list, but we do have a number of testifiers. Is the question to this testifier?
Yep. Yes,
okay. Representative Franson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Wessel, I'm very intrigued by your statement about the liability issue and possible the farmer who had a good year having to possibly pay back that tax credit of a potential $1,000. Members, this is very concerning. I thought this exchange and the Affordable Care Act was supposed to be great for everybody, but from what I'm understanding here and what I'm hearing is that success will be punished. Ms. Wessel, could you expand on that a little bit?
Sure. Yeah, Ms. Wessel, but I want to keep the discussion to this bill because, you know, members, the exchange got signed into law today, mm-hmm. so that is what it is. But, you know, but please go ahead and answer the question.
Well, I mean, I can say in relation to this bill, the advantage is that because these individuals no longer be accepting tax credits directly, that funding would flow to the state instead. Individuals would not be liable for those tax risks if their income increases. And so that's the advantage of this bill, is protecting individuals from that.
Okay, Representative Grunhagen.
Okay, real quickly, I understand you're under time constraint here, but thanks for your testimony. So therefore, if their income does go up then over and above the, you know, a certain level of the federal poverty, then they have to look for an individual plan either in the private market or the in the exchange, correct?
Right, if they exceed...
Ms. Wessel, please go through.
Thank you, Madam Chair. If their income does exceed the limits of the program, then they would then become eligible for the exchange and potentially for tax credits through the exchange, yes.
Okay, thank you. All right, thank you very much. Joel Euland. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the committee, my name is Joel Euland. I am the Assistant Director for Legislative Affairs at UCARE. I'm also here today on behalf of the Minnesota Council of Health Plans, and we are here to support the efforts of House File 214. We believe that this is an important piece of legislation that adds stability for Minnesota CARE members into the future, and is something that we definitely believe should go forward. I think, obviously, one of the areas that we feel is one of the biggest benefits of the bill is that it removes the $10,000 hospital cap that is currently in the Minnesota CARE program. We've seen this as a barrier for our members for a number of years, and believe that this is certainly the right way to go. We do have a couple of areas that we just want to continue to work on as the bill moves forward into the Finance Committee. The first area is on page 6.2 of the Delete Everything Amendment. And this is relating to the additional benefits. It's kind of confusing when you look through the paragraph because it looks like it's deleting out a number of benefits, but it's actually clarifying that it's all essential health benefits required under the Affordable Care Act. I think just as this moves on into the Finance Committee, I think that's one of the areas where we're going to be very interested to see what benefits are we are going to be able to look at and be able to afford to do. We just, from a health plan perspective, have probably more of a practical concern as to what benefits would be in place starting on January 1st of 14 and what it is that we need to be looking at as far as recontracting with our providers to prepare for that, in addition to all the other changes that are coming into effect on January 1st of 14. So that's just an area that we will be wanting to watch as we move into the Finance Committee. Another area is on page 15, and this is on line 15.25. And this is talking about establishing geographic areas for Minnesota CARE that are consistent with geographic areas for the medical assistance program. And obviously, I can understand the intent of that. We do want to make sure that there is consistency for the members. We do have a practical concern with this, though, and that is relating to county-based purchasing. I will just give you a UCARE example for this. We are currently providing Minnesota CARE in 18 counties that are county-based purchasing counties in which the county-based purchasing plans handle the medical assistance. So we have just some practical concerns as to how this language works in practicality. For us, those 18 counties represent about 1,400 of our members, and so that's something that we would want to continue to work on as this moves on through the process. And then finally, on page 7.18 is language relating to the family deductible. And I just have to say, you know, as you kind of look at what this legislation is doing, I've kind of almost termed it as pushing the reset button on the Minnesota CARE program. And I don't think that we would ever push reset and probably have the family deductible be part of the reset. This has been problematic language from both a consumer perspective. It's also problematic for the providers to implement, and it's been very problematic for the health plans to implement. Now, granted, in the language that you can see here, there is the ability for the health plans to waive this, and that's assuming that the commissioner allows us to waive the program.
Yeah.
We just believe that it should be repealed.
Mr. Euland, I'm sorry. Let me ask staff to clarify, because I think the language that you are concerned about, I'm being told, was removed by amendment.
Oh,
so if I could go to Mr. Chun to explain that.
Madam Chair and members, the A4 amendment, line 2.9 of that amendment, took out the reference to the family deductible that Mr. Euland's talking about on page 7. So it is out of the delete all amendment.
Well, there we go.
See there, Mr. Euland, we took care of you before you ever came to tell us about it.
All right. Well, that sounds good. And thank you, Madam Chair. I would be happy to answer any additional questions.
All right. Are there questions from members for Mr. Euland? Okay. Not seeing any. Thank you very much. We have Paul Sobosinski. Hope I said that right. Okay, and Heidi Morlock. So, welcome to the committee.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today on behalf of Land Stewardship Project in support of House File 214, Minnesota CARE. Land Stewardship Project is an organization that works on sustainable agriculture. By that mean, an agriculture that supports the farmer, the community, and the environment. One of the programs that we have at the Land Stewardship Project is the Beginning Farmer Program that works at helping young farmers get started in farming. Healthcare is a particularly big issue for beginning farmers. particularly bidding farmers establishing livestock operations in which both spouses want to work on the farm and when income is low to start at. So for us, in terms of the Land Stewardship Project, we see this Minnesota Care as very vital. A number of our members are engaged in, are part of the program. This past year, both the Minnesota Farmers Union and the Minnesota National Farmers Organization all passed strong policy statements in support of continuing Minnesota Care because of its importance to farmers. Thank you for the opportunity to testify.
All right, thank you. Ms. Morlock, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members, for the opportunity to speak today. My name is Heidi Morlock. I live in Belle Plaine Township, and I'm on the board of the Land Stewardship Project. My husband and I are both self-employed, so our jobs don't offer health insurance. I'm an organic farmer, and my husband is a church musician and works several part-time jobs. Together, we make around $30,000 for a family of four. And over the last 15 years, we've had a number of different experiences with the healthcare system. First, we know what it's like to be uninsured, which we were for 5 years. And this is stressful because we're already in a precarious financial situation. Farming is a risky business, and you're always nervous that one bad accident could put you under. And during that time, we skipped preventative care, doctor visits, and always did a cost-benefit analysis before ordering tests, x-rays, or other procedures. Second, we also know what it's like to have health insurance that didn't meet all of our needs, and that was difficult to afford. For 3 years, we had health insurance with Blue Cross Blue Shield that had a $10,000 deductible. We got pregnant, which was considered a pre-existing condition, and couldn't upgrade. So health insurance was essentially worthless for the birth of our first son. We had about $5,000 of out-of-pocket expenses. And finally, we know what it's like to have access to a strong public health care program like Minnesota Care, and that's what we're currently covered on. Now we're able to get preventative care, and we don't have to be afraid of what will happen if there's an accident on the farm or some other health condition. And we know this firsthand. My husband has a mental illness, and in a manic state, he went through a glass window. He needed surgery and a hospital stay for recovery. And I remember when we received the "this is not a bill" statement for $40,000, and I cried because Minnesota Care covered all of it, and it was such a relief. It's important to me that I can be a full-time farmer. I'm a better steward of the land. I'm keeping the soil in place. I'm protecting water quality and increasing biodiversity. And I can't farm at this level if I were forced to get another job off the farm, like so many other farmers are forced to do. And I look forward to the day when we have a health care system that is straightforward, accessible, affordable, and provides comprehensive coverage for everyone. By implementing a basic health plan, Minnesota will continue its long-standing legacy of providing health care for all of its citizens. And every Minnesotan needs affordable health insurance options so we can stay healthy, stay in business, and serve our communities. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much. Questions for members for these two testifiers? Okay, not seeing any. Thank you. We've got Rolanda Mason from Legal Aid and then Sue Abderholden. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Rolanda Mason. I'm an attorney at Legal Aid, and I was also a member of the 2012 Health Reform Task Force. And in that capacity, I chaired the Access Work Group. I'm here today to speak in support of House File 214. The Access Work Group was tasked with looking at the health care needs of low-income people who will be ineligible for medical assistance even after the expansion in 2014. Basically, the population that the Affordable Care Act looks at under the basic health plan, those people who have incomes between 138 and 200% of federal poverty guidelines. As we started our work, the Access Work Group quickly adopted the fundamental principle that health reform in Minnesota should not result in anyone losing access to health care coverage or receiving less coverage than they currently have. We spent weeks looking at the needs of this population. We heard from Minnesotans who would be directly impacted people who are currently at this income level and receiving care under Minnesota Care, some who are eligible for Minnesota Care but who are unable to afford it. We heard from community agencies who currently serve this population. We heard from healthcare providers who are providing care to members of this population. And we heard from people who had researched both the healthcare needs of this population and their economic capabilities to provide healthcare coverage for themselves. The conclusions that we reached is that this population is sicker than the general population as a whole, and therefore making sure that they have adequate access to healthcare coverage going forward is important on many levels. And the commissioner alluded to some of those in her testimony earlier. It's important primarily for these folks. They need to be able to access healthcare because of their increased healthcare needs. But it's important for our society as a whole, too, because if they don't have access to coverage, then we will be looking at much higher uninsured reimbursement rates when they go to emergency rooms and higher cost of care providers, and other secondary costs that come when people ignore the health care needs that they should be seeking treatment for. We also concluded that the exchange, if people were asked to go meet directly into the exchange in this population level, that that would result in reductions in access and decrease in coverage, primarily because this population simply would be unable to afford coverage in the exchange that would be comparable to the coverage that they now receive under Minnesota Care. We concluded that our current Minnesota Care program is generally a good program, and it provides access and coverage to this population. And we felt that the state should support this program and build upon it with some improvements. The improvements that we recommended and that were adopted by the task force and included in the task force roadmap for a healthier Minnesota was to reduce the cost sharing. So we specifically support the provisions in this bill that would reduce the cost sharing requirements for people in 2015, and we would like to see those reductions implemented even earlier in 2014. We also recommended that there be some specific increases in coverage, such as the removal of the hospital cap. So again, as this bill removes the hospital cap, we find that that to be in support of the recommendations of the task force. All in all, we think that this bill moves Minnesota forward in the direction that we need to go. It improves upon a program that is a model nationwide for serving this population, and that helps us to fulfill that fundamental principle of making sure that health reform in Minnesota benefits all of our citizens. So for those reasons, we would urge you to support this bill. Thank you.
Great. Thank you very much. Are there questions for this testifier? Not seeing any. Thank you. Ms. Abderholden, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Sue Abderholden, Executive Director of NAMI Minnesota. And I'm speaking today in favor of the bill. As was mentioned earlier, Minnesota Care has what we call the Model Mental Health Benefit Set, which was passed in 2007, and it's the same benefits you get under medical assistance. So that would include children's therapeutic services and supports, adult rehab mental health services, assertive community action teams, mobile crisis services, all of those kinds of things that you may not be able to get under a private insurance plan. There is a link between mental illness and poverty, partly due to higher stress levels that, of course, can cause depression and anxiety, and also greater exposure to trauma. So we do see that people under Minnesota Care do tend to access more mental health services, and we want to make sure that they can get the services that will actually keep them working. We know of many young adults, especially before until Medicaid gets expanded, who actually would prefer to go under Minnesota Care because they don't want to say that they're disabled and that they will never work again, like you would, frankly, under the Medicaid system. So they've really favored the Minnesota Care program, and they can access all the services that they need. The second issue for us has always been the large deductibles. There was a study done by the Commonwealth that found that 38% of adults who had at least a $1,000 or more deductible reported at least one of four barriers to accessing treatment. It could be not filling a prescription, not following up on a test, or not seeing a doctor. We have found under the School Linked Mental Health Grants that we do have a number of families who are what we would call underinsured. They have high deductibles. They cannot afford to make that payment for, you know, one visit, two visits, three visits, it really becomes a problem for them. And so, again, Minnesota Care and the benefits that are under it really make mental health care so much more accessible. It is true that under the exchange, for the first time, mental health and substance use disorder treatment will be covered, but we don't know the extent to which it will be. So thank you very much for the opportunity to testify.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Abderholden. Are there questions for Ms. Abderholden? All right. Not seeing any. Thank you very much. So, members, at this point, we have some amendments in our packet, and I'm going to move the A51 amendment. And if you note, this amendment is an amendment to the A4 that we adopted earlier, so that will help members get oriented to what we're doing here. And it just, it's not a very substantive change. It just simply says that if a healthcare delivery system is, it already says here in the bill as we've got it now that it has to document how other providers and counties will help to provide services to persons who they're going to be covering under this new program. It simply says that they need to, if they're relying on somebody else, they have to get verification from the somebody else that somebody else is supporting it and willing to participate in it. So, Representative Murphy, any comment on that amendment?
Madam Chair and members, I will leave it to the committee and don't have objection to the amendment.
Okay. Are there questions for members? Discussion of the amendment. All right. Seeing none, all those in favor of the A51 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, no. The motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. And then, members, we have the A6 amendment. And for this one, this is a little more complicated. It's got some statutory references in it. I'm going to ask Mr. Chun if he would explain the amendment to the committee.
Madam Chair and members, the A6 amendment amends the service delivery process for Minnesota Care, which would take effect January 1 of 2015. The language beginning on 1.3 of the amendment, this would basically require the commissioner to use the existing MA competitive procurement process under the prepaid medical assistance program, and it mentions specific subdivisions. It does exclude subdivision 33, which is the PMAP competitive bidding process. Then the addition on line 1.10 of the amendment, this is language related to coordination with state-administered health care programs, and it directs the commissioner to basically comply with some existing sections of law. The first section, 256B.69, subdivision 3A, deals with giving counties the opportunity to consult and provide input in the contracting process. 256B.692, subdivision 1, this is general authority to operate county-based purchasing under medical assistance. And 256B.694, this allows but does not require the commissioner to consider and approve sole source contracting.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chun. Are there questions for members? Representative Abler.
Thanks, Madam Chair. And I support the idea of this in general. I support county-based purchasing, at least to some extent. And I was just talking to Mr. Lights, and he might want to comment on it, but this limits, I think this has got value, but it might be a little broad, and this is going to be worked on, I know, along the way. So I think the point is to limit the competitive pricing stuff, not in county-based counties, because they're already pretty lean, I think, and this other part would be for that, but not to limit it in counties where there's not county-based purchasing, and maybe Mr. Lights wants to comment about that. But I think it makes sense for today, and it could be worked on along the way to make sure it's focused to accomplish just what you want to have it do.
Sure. Thank you, Representative Abler. Mr. Lights, if you'd like to have a seat, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, this is Scott Lights, Assistant Commissioner at at DHS. Representative Abler, I think, captured the substance of what is intended here, which is to ensure that for the counties that are in county-based purchasing arrangements now, that those counties, if they were competitively bid, that price not be a factor included in that. We haven't, as an agency, we've done two procurements now under this administration in county-based counties. And in neither of those cases did we use a competitive procurement, because I think the role of the county-based plans is an important one, and we wanted to preserve that. For those counties, I think our concern with the amendment, the way it's structured now, is that for the counties that are not part of county-based purchasing, where the licensed HMOs are the carriers, this, as we read it, would limit our ability to use cost or price as a factor. And we think that's been a very effective tool in competitive bidding in the metro, and I think overall we've been able to save a fair amount of budgetary dollars using that process, and we'd like to have the flexibility to do that, Madam Chair. So I think we're happy to continue to work with you moving forward to make sure that we capture what I think was intended without having effects that maybe weren't intended.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Leitz. And that would certainly be our intention, is to keep working on this, because we will be going right to the Health and Human Service Finance Committee, and so we have some opportunity. Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I'm grateful for Commissioner Leitz's testimony. And the question that I have on the amendment is really about its, if there's any financial costs going forward. And I think that's an appropriate question for us to explore between now and the Finance Committee, and something we can look at in the Finance Committee. So at this time, understanding that there is work to be done to understand its implications, I am willing to accept the amendment and committed to working with you, the chair, and the agency at the department to make sure that we are getting this right.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Murphy. Representative Loeffler.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. And I think that as the bill envisions potentially merging this with the MA program, or looking at that option anyhow, I think it's good, Chair Liebling, that you brought in the idea of the county input and consultation on this, because there's been a mixed history. I think some counties have put a lot of time and effort into trying to really give useful feedback on where it's working, where it isn't, who's falling through the cracks, and trying to do problem solving. I think it's become less successful when they've done metro-wide contracting, because then it's harder for the problems in a particular county to get any attention when you have half the state in that group. But I do think that partnership and feedback from on the ground, where they're seeing who's falling through the cracks for whatever reason, we all ought to be working together to patch those cracks and make the system stronger. So I'm hoping that as this continues to evolve, that at least that portion's retained.
All right. Thank you, Representative Loeffler. Mr. Yulin wants to comment. Welcome back.
Thank you again, Madam Chair. And for the record, again, Joel Yulin from UCARE. I just wanted to express a couple of concerns with both the A4 and the A6 amendments. And our concerns are somewhat relating to the fairness issues between how county-based purchasing is treated compared to health plans, and the potential for the single-source contracting with that. It is problematic for us. That's something that we'll want to continue to work through that. Also, just on equal footing as it relates to the financial aspects of this, we want to make sure that all of that is dealt with on an equal basis as well. From a consumer perspective, I think one of the things that the ACA called for is that there be a maximum amount of choice for members, and so that is another area of concern that we have with single source contracting, is that we do want to be able to have the ability to have multiple choices for consumers to choose from when they are looking at what their options are in their local area.
Okay, thank you. All right, with that, all those in favor of the A6, please say aye.
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 All opposed, no. The motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. And members, we will continue to work on that, discuss it, and I'm sure Ben will get this as part of the fiscal note, which will be helpful for us. Okay, back on the bill, and is there any discussion? Or let me just ask, is there anyone else in the audience who wants to testify for or against the bill? All right, seeing none. Questions for members. Representative Mack.
Just a brief question, Madam Chair. Thank you. For the author, Representative Murphy, would you anticipate, I'm assuming a fiscal note has been requested, I'm just wondering, would you anticipate there being one ready by the time this hits the Finance Committee, or possibly local impact, as well as understanding some of those issues we were talking about earlier?
Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Mack, that would be my anticipation and my hope.
Okay, thank you. And just for the record, the A3 is not being offered. Okay. Representative Huntley.
Just a note there. In the A4 amendment, there needs to also be some clarification where it says healthcare delivery system must demonstrate. There are already healthcare delivery systems that have signed 3-year contracts with the department, and so and between now and my committee, I'll come up with an amendment that in effect says if they're signing a new contract, this would apply. If they're living with their old contract, they don't have to do that.
Thank you, Representative Huntley. Representative Murphy, do you want to respond to that?
Well, Madam Chair and Mr. Chair, I think that's a good idea. Thank you.
Okay, and I have Representative Grunhagen and then Representative Abler.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, just, you know, this just continues to take us down the path of low reimbursement to providers, and I appreciate that you're trying to address that. But that's the problem, is government-run programs, and just got an email today with an article that Massachusetts has the highest health care premiums in the nation now. So on the floor I said it was 2 or 3, but now it's in the nation. So it's not solving the problem, we're just exasperating the problem. So that's my difficulty with this plan. Thank you.
All right, Representative Abler.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, and actually I was talking not with Representative, but about that matter, and I had Mr. Chun draft an amendment. If you want to adopt it, I'd like to offer it orally. It discusses that very same thing about existing contracts, and so maybe he can run it by us and see if we like it, and we can do it today.
Do you have that in writing, Mr. Chun? Okay, I mean, we can consider that.
Madam Chair and members, the amendment would be to the A4 amendment. So on that amendment, page 1 after line 19 would insert an effective date section. So it would read, effective date. This section applies to healthcare delivery system contracts entered into or renewed on or after July 1st of 2013.
Madam Chair.
Representative Abler.
I'll move that, and I'm not sure if it's perfect, but I think it's awfully close. At least this way there's something for people to see what the specific is and see if that's the right way to say it. And so I think that gets us where we want to get to.
Okay. Representative Huntley, did you want to comment? Does that take care of your concern?
I think that takes care of the problem. And then, so if you want to put it on now, that's fine with me.
Representative Murphy.
Madam Chair and members, as I read this, or as I consider what I've written on the piece of paper, what we're trying to accomplish is to make sure that the language here applies to contracts going forward and not contracts that are currently in force. Yeah. And if that is the case, then I'm willing to accept the amendment.
All right. Okay. Any other questions or comments on the amendment? Did everybody understand it, first of all? Everybody got that? And I don't have the actual language, but Mr. Chun has it written there to give us. So, Mr. Chun, maybe I could just read it again, or you could read it again if you would, just so all members know what we're doing here.
It would read, there'd be a head note saying effective date, then this section applies to healthcare delivery system contracts entered into or renewed on or after July 1st, 2013.
All right, thank you. Everybody got that. Okay, all right. All those in favor of that oral amendment, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, no. The motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Representative Abler.
Madam Chair, just a comment related to the A4 amendment, just broader than this bill. But for a future reference for members, something dawned on me a couple days ago. As we do all these ACOs, a lot of the protections we're so proud of having in our Chapter 62 and other places for providers and patients and everybody might be gone while these groups enter into contracts with provider groups that are contractual agreements that don't involve current law. So I'm just putting that out there as a thought to think about as these become more and more plentiful. And I think I'm right about that. I have no fix today. I just wanted to bring it forward to this group as a concern. Because none of us mean that we don't want these ACOs to be not operating under the umbrellas we've come so accustomed to in the last 40 years since we've been doing or longer. So that's just a comment. Thank you, Madam Chair.
All right. Thank you, Representative Abler. Okay. I think we are ready to vote on the bill, members. So I will renew my motion that House File 214, as amended, be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the Committee on Health and Human Services Finance. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, no.
No.
The motion prevails, and the bill is passed. Thank you, Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members, very much.
Okay, members, we are going to take up House File 878, Representative Swatsky. Welcome to the committee, Representative Swatsky. I'm going to move Representative Swatsky's bill. I move that House File 878 be recommended to pass and be referred to the Committee on Health and Human Services Finance. So, Representative Swatsky, would you like to explain your bill?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair and members. Thank you for hearing House File 878 today. I am Mary Swatsky. Presently, county-owned and operated hospital-based dental clinics classified as critical access dental providers are reimbursed at higher rates than other dental providers. This bill requires the Commissioner of Human Services to designate city-owned as well and operated hospitals to be included as well. And today I have Dale Husted from Rice Memorial Hospital with me to help field any questions that you might have. You might notice that the bill in front of you is on line 1.7, I think. Is all we're adding is the word city.
2.7
members. The word city to the bill.
All right. So for those members who like us to not add a lot of words to our statute books, this should be a bill that doesn't get too much objection on that front. Does Mr. Husted, did you want to testify, or should we just are you just here for questions?
Be happy to make a few comments if I could.
Okay. Well, welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the tape.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Dale Husted. I'm the Chief Administrative Officer at Rice Memorial Hospital in Wilmer, Minnesota. And I am speaking on in support of House File 878. I would like to speak for just a few moments about the Rice Regional Dental Clinic and then explain why we would support this bill. Rice Memorial Hospital is a city-owned hospital in Wilmer and has been around for about 75 years. In December of 2007, we opened up a dental clinic with the specific purpose of serving the oral needs of the underserved residents in the area. And it has been in existence now for 5 years, and in those 5 years, the clinic has accomplished much more than what we expected. It serves the care for the underserved in west central and southwest Minnesota, and it reaches patients across 17 counties, not only in the Candiota County in Wilmer, but all the way to the South Dakota border and all the way down to Pipestone is where we get our patients from. Our board of directors really was committed to this. It was a real mission issue for us to try to provide that dental care, and we had the support of dentists and dental professionals throughout the area, and many of those dentists continue to provide volunteer services at the clinic today. The state demonstrated a great commitment to that earlier in providing partial capital funding for the clinic's construction. And the University of Minnesota School of Dentistry is a big partner with us. The university provides last year dental students to provide care in the clinic, and it continues to be at this time what the university dental school would identify as the most efficient and a most effective teaching clinic that they have in their cadre of clinics. The dental students are placed in four dental students are placed in 4-week rotations throughout the year, and the hospital provides housing for all of those students when they're out in Wilmer providing care through the dental clinic. In the 5 years that we've been in existence, we've had more than 6,700 unduplicated patients. We provided more than 79,000 dental services. About 33,000 of our patients are children. We've had more than 33,000 clinic visits. 36% of our patients are children. And about 90% of the patients that we see are patients who are on MA, on some kind of public assistance, or uninsured. Most of the patients that we see will tell us that they have not seen a dentist for a very, very long time, and in some cases they've never been to a dentist.
Okay. Mr. Husted, could I ask you to finish up so that we can vote on your bill?
Absolutely, thank you. We were notified last year that through the Department of Human Services that the dental clinic did not meet the criteria to be a critical access dental provider. And it didn't because it didn't meet the criteria as either a county-owned hospital running that clinic or a 501c3 or a University of Minnesota clinic. It was a city-owned hospital that ran the clinic. And so we were informed that we would not meet the definition and would not then qualify to receive the additional reimbursement as a critical access clinic. And so we are here to support 878 and add a city-owned hospital to be included in the definition of those entities that can be eligible under the critical access bill.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you. Are there questions from members? Representative Mack.
Just a brief question. Thank you, Madam Chair. Any idea to the testifier, maybe Representative Sawatsky, how many city-owned dental clinics there are in the state right now, or how many this would bring into being qualified as a critical access unit?
Yes, Madam Chair, I can answer that. We're not aware that there is any other city-owned hospital that has a dental clinic in the state that would meet the criteria.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
All right, and Representative Mack, I'm sure we'll find out with the fiscal note before we will pass this out of finance. And thank you for asking a question. I was curious about that myself. Okay, any other questions for members? All right, seeing none, I will renew my motion that House File 878 be recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on Health and Human Services Finance. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, no. Motion prevails, and the bill is passed. Thank you very much. All right, Representative Allen. Representative Allen moves House File 1419. Oops, I'm sorry. Wrong bill. Oops, wrong bill, sorry. Representative Allen moves House File 1210 that it be recommended to pass and be placed on the general register. Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair. To House File 1210, this bill, it will allow tribal agency social workers to be included as eligible agency personnel in the current Board of Social Work grandfathering licensure process. And you have two testifiers here today, Madam Chair.
Very good. Welcome to the committee.
Good afternoon, and thank you, Madam Chair and members. I will be extremely brief. This language is not new to this committee. This bill was heard, and it was amended onto another House bill to hopefully get it some legs and move it along. Subsequently, the bill was heard in the Senate as a standalone bill, the companion, and that was approved unanimously, and it was moved to the consent agenda. So today we are just hoping that once again this committee will support this language, and that as a standalone bill it will be able to move a little more easily through the legislative process. So I'm hoping the committee will support House File 1210. And I would just like to turn it over real briefly to Angela Bellinger from the White Earth Tribe, who wants to let you know directly why this is important to the tribes. And she and two other companions have traveled well over 4 hours to be here today to testify before the committee. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Welcome. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members. This bill is non-controversial. It is supported by tribal organizations, the Board of Social Work, Department of Human Services, and NAMI. This bill increases, improves a cultural competent workforce and service delivery for tribal communities, families, and children. It enhances public protection in Indian communities throughout the state of Minnesota. Madam Chair and members, this concludes our testimony. The Minnesota American Indian Mental Health Advisory Council and tribes ask for your support. A vote is a yes vote is a win-win for the citizens of Minnesota, the tribes, and the Board of Social Work. Thank you for your time, Madam Chair and members.
Thank you. Thank you for making the trip down today. Is there anyone in the audience who wants to testify for or against this bill? Not seeing anybody. Any questions from members? Yeah, not seeing any questions. So that being the case, I think we're ready to vote on the bill. And Representative Allen renews her motion that House Bill 1210 be recommended to pass and placed on the general register. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, no. Motion prevails. Thank you very much. Have a safe trip home.
Thank you so much.
And Representative Allen, are you prepared to present your next bill? 1419.
Yes.
Okay, we will take up House File 1419. And okay, Representative Allen moves that House File 1419 be recommended to pass and be referred to the Committee on Health and Human Services Finance. So go ahead, Representative Allen.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. This bill, House Bill 1419, adds to the critical access dental providers. It adds another category of providers, which are who are private practicing dentists, and then it lists the criteria that they be located within a health professional shortage area. That more than 50% of the dentist patient encounters per year are with patients who are uninsured or covered by medical assistance or Minnesota care. The dentist does not restrict access or services because of the patient's financial limitations or public assistance status, and the level of service provided by the dentist is critical in maintaining adequate levels of patient access within the service area and in which the dentist operates. And we have one testifier here today. I want to add that this is such a broad area, and I know there's been various reports that have been presented to this committee regarding the need here and the inadequacy and the need for resources. So this is just one step in that direction, and I believe that there's more work that can be done on it, and I'm willing to do that, Madam Chair and members.
All right. Thank you. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name's Laura Kramer, and I am the Director of Government Affairs with the Minnesota Dental Association. I want to thank you all for the opportunity to speak in support of this. Thank Representative Allen for bringing this forward to help address what we would see as a dental public health crisis in Minnesota. The Department of Health recently released a report. Actually, if we could pass around, I have a summary in it. Talks about how 55% of third graders in Minnesota have cavities. And I think we can do a lot better than that. That's a lot, and it falls disproportionately on low-income folks as well. The Office of the Legislative Auditor recently released a report that studied the medical assistance reimbursement rates for dental services. That report said a lot of things, but one of them was that there are a lot of different payment policies and procedures that the department uses to reimburse providers for dental services. And they've talked about how that is inconsistent, it's not well coordinated, and that amount of different policies has negatively impacted dental providers and then patient access as well. This bill does take one step to address one of those inconsistencies. That is that over the last couple of years, private practices were removed from the critical access program so that they were no longer able to receive an additional reimbursement increase if they met a certain threshold of medical assistance patients. We've seen it hurt a lot of clinics. We've seen clinics close after they lost this supplemental payment. I think the bill takes a step forward. There are things we would like to see addressed in it. It still places a lot of restrictions to allow a private practice dentist to be able to get into that program, but I think we can work on that because it is a lifeline for some of the providers out there, and we certainly appreciate that. I would say that based on the OLA findings and our personal experiences with the program, we do think that more needs to be done. The OLA recognized that and recommended that there be an overall fee increase that would be broad-based and provide some long-term support to the program. I think the reality is that the state is going to need to make a significant investment in the dental program if we do want it to work for all Minnesotans. We thank you certainly for your time. We look forward to working with all of you on a solution that does better meet the oral health needs of Minnesotans.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Kramer. And I'm going to take questions from members, but before that, I just want to say in terms of scheduling, we have 5 more minutes in our committee time. We could maybe go 5 minutes long, and we have 2 more bills that might not be very controversial. So if we can get to those, it would be great, and then we won't have to come back this evening. Representative Loeffler.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. What I don't understand, I would like to better understand, is why the limitation that it be outside the 7-county metro area. I have constituents who I have tried to find providers and have not been able to. There's a real shortage, particularly in our urban areas. And I think this might be an incentive for some of our more business-like providers to think about being more supportive of the community in which they practice.
Ms. Kramer?
I think that's an excellent point, and that was one of the current concerns we did have. I know some of you heard from a pediatric clinic that's just down near the Excel Center last week, and they see 70% medical assistance children, and they don't get this bump, and they're worried about whether or not they have to close the clinic. So we would certainly be supportive of that change.
Madam Chair,
all right, Representative Loeffler.
I'd just like to make an oral amendment then to on line 2.17 to delete and is located outside the 7-county metropolitan area.
All right. Representative Loeffler moves an oral amendment on line 2.17, put a period after 254E, and then delete the rest of that line. Correct? Okay. And Representative Mack? Oh, sorry.
Sorry, Madam Chair. Just a really brief question. I'm assuming there's a reason the bill was drafted as it was, maybe to Representative Allen. Is there a reason it was outside the 7 Metro? It just seems like an easily willing to fix it. I'm just wondering why it started out like that. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Allen?
Madam Chair, I believe that initially it was just a more conservative bill, and so because of the cost, I have no reason that I'm aware of. Other parties, other than that's how it was initially presented, but I haven't heard any reason why we can't remove that restriction.
All right, thank you. And it's probably, I'm sure there's a cost impact, I'm sure, but, you know, this is going to finance. Representative Zerwas.
No, and you make an excellent point, Madam Chair. This will go to finance. My concern is that this will make the bill much too expensive when the fiscal note comes in.
Yeah, thank you, Representative Zerwas. Okay. Other comments on the amendment? Okay. So on Representative Loeffler's oral amendment, does everyone understand the amendment? Okay, all those in favor of the oral amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. And other questions, members, to the bill? Is there anyone in the audience who wants to testify for or against this bill? All right. And seeing no other questions, I think we can... Representative Allen is going to renew her motion that House File 1419 as amended be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Health and Human Services Finance. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion prevails. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Member.
Representative Hamilton. House File 770. Welcome to the committee, Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee.
Well, let us move your bill first.
Okay.
Okay, so Representative Zerwas.
I'll move Representative Hamilton's bill.
Representative Zerwas moves House File 770, that it be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Health and Human Services Finance. And then, Representative Hamilton, there are a couple of amendments in our packet, and what's your pleasure with those? Are those authors' amendments to...
Madam Chair, I'd like to move, or have someone move the A2 amendment to get the bill in the order in which I'd like to speak to.
All right. Representative Zerwas will move the A2 amendment for to get the bill in the shape in which Representative Hamilton would like to discuss it. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, no. The motion prevails. That amendment is adopted. So, Representative Hamilton, and the other one I assume is will be adopted, or you?
No, that one's obsolete.
Okay, so that one is withdrawn, the A1. So, to your bill, Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I know we're short on time. This is a bill that was brought to me from Senator Sharon as we were waiting for Representative Johnson to be elected. So I agreed to carry it, and basically what we're doing is decertifying two beds and transferring one bed to Nicollet County. And the department said to Nicollet County, if you need a bed, go out and try to find another one. And the one that they're able to identify happens to be located in the area in which I represent. So I do have two testifiers here if you'd like to take testimony and answer any questions.
Certainly, we could do that. Representative Hamilton, who's first? Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Barb Christensen, Nicollet County Social Services. Thank
Please.
You, Madam Chair and committee. Boy, trying to be brief, that's really hard. First of all, I'm really excited about this project. It's been in the work for 1.5 to 2 years to develop a site to serve very complex and complicated children in our region of the state. The main drive of this is that we've had to place children 2, 3, 4, or 5 hours away from our families in order to serve them the needs they need to serve, and that's really difficult on our families. It's difficult on our social workers as well, but it's more difficult on families who do want to be involved in their children's lives. And we've tried the least restrictive, most appropriate services to keep them in their homes, because obviously that's the main directive. But in some cases, it just doesn't work. Families burn out. Children get really complicated. We need a lot of professional 24/7 with trained staff to serve these children. And our families just want to be able to be involved in their children's lives. And we had the opportunity when we closed an adult site to work with DHS and receive 4 beds to transfer from an adult site to a children's site. With the fiscal limitations, we were not able to afford to do that. And so we went back to DHS and asked for 2 additional beds to make it 6. They agreed for 1 if I could find it. Well, I found it, and we've been working real close with Cottonwood County to work to see if we can get that development to happen. So our families would really appreciate it.
Thank you. Boy, this is starting to feel like somebody's donating a kidney here, right? It's a little donation situation. Welcome to the committee.
All right. Thank you, Madam Chair and committee. I will be brief. It's not quite a donation. We're not quite at altruistic, but Home for Creative Living is licensed for 21 beds.
Please state your name.
Oh, I'm sorry. Devin Nelson from Habilitative Services and Home for Creative Living. And as Barb said, we have a facility that's licensed for 21 beds, although over the last several years we have not been at full capacity. We have had respite in there. But we are able to, we believe, and Cottonwood County is in agreement that if we would downsize, our preference, as Representative Hamilton said, would be to downsize to 18 beds, and that way it would allow the people that are living at HCL all to have single bedrooms. Right now we have 3 people that would be required to share a bedroom if we're at full occupancy. To do that, we're asking for a rate adjustment to cover some of the fixed costs that don't go away when we downsize from 21 to 18. The rate that we are asking for does reflect the savings. There are some things that we could cut back on by downsizing by the 3 beds, and that's what represents that rate. Again, we would like to help out, and we feel that if we could make that downsize to 18, it would be better for the people that live at HCL, and also would allow us to be more financially stable in the future. So, very brief. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Representative Loeffler.
Thank you. Just a very brief suggestion, and that is that you work with the Department of Human Services and others to try and see if you can get to 16, because then we actually get federal government to pay half the cost, and they might be willing to increase your rates sufficient to make that work. But 16 or less gets 50% federal payment, and that would really help.
Wonderful.
Okay.
Wonderful advice. Thank you.
Representative Hamilton.
Yeah. Wonderful advice, Madam Chair.
All right. Thank questions? Other questions? Representative Johnson.
Madam Chair, this isn't a question. I just want to thank Representative Hamilton for doing my job before I got here. I appreciate it.
All right.
Happy to help, Madam Chair.
All right. Other questions from members? Okay. I do have a question, and that just... this whole thing about moving beds and changing rates, and I just want to ask both of you whether the reimbursement rates, I assume, are a necessary part of this, so that if you didn't get the change in rates, would that pretty much kill the deal?
They're shaking their head yes.
Shaking their heads yes. Okay. All right. Other questions from members? Okay. Seeing none. So Representative Zerwas will renew his motion that House File 770 as amended be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the Committee on Health and Human Services Finance. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion prevails. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
All right, we're on the last bill, and then we may not have to be back here this evening. House File 841, Representative Ward. All right. Representative Ward moves that House File 841 be recommended to pass and be placed on the general register. And Representative Ward, you have an author's amendment. And so Representative Ward will move her amendment, and that is the A13-0311. To get the bill in the shape in which she would like to discuss it. So all those in favor of the amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, no. Motion prevails. Amendment is adopted. And to your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thanks to you all for staying just a couple of minutes. I think this will be a fairly easy thing to address. This is a bill for an act relating to human services, modifying the processes for assessments. House File 841 modifies the assessment requirements for medical assistance long-term care services. For people requesting an assessment in order to determine the waiver or alternative care program eligibility, it removes the requirement from that updates. The original bill called for updates changing 60 days to 90 days, and the improvement is to keep it at 60 days, but remove the face-to-face meeting with the enrollee. And I have Kathy Lamp from Hennepin County who would like to tell you a little bit more about it.
All right. Thank you very much. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. Members of the committee, just very briefly, this the problem that counties had, and my name is Kathy Lamp. I work with Hennepin County Human Services Public Health Department, and I'm also here speaking on behalf of MACSA. We appreciate the cooperation of the Department of Human Services in helping us to address a need that we had to be able to provide a longer window for valid assessments. The problem we have was aligning the eligibility for medical assistance with the eligibility that for elderly waiver, which requires the assessment. So sometimes, and this would allow us with only 60 days, if we had to redo it each time, it would require a face-to-face determination every 60 days. This allows us to, in cases where we do not need to again go out and visit the client, allows us to be able to update that assessment.
All right, thank you. Questions for members? Is there anyone who would like to testify for or against this bill? All right, not seeing anybody, not seeing any questions. So I think we're in a position to have Representative Ward renew her motion that House File 814, as amended, be recommended to pass and placed on the general register. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, no. Motion prevails, and the bill is moved to the general register. And then, members, we're going to adjourn. We do not have to meet this evening, but I just want to mention to everyone who might be on the Finance Committee to watch your email because that was scheduled in the Capitol. They may be able to use this
Yeah,
room.
They changed the time and the room.
Okay, so just check your email on that. And Representative Morgan.
8 o'clock and...
Representative Morgan.
Madam Chair, I just for the record, could you say that the House file for the bill that we just passed?
That was House File 841.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay. All right, members. Check your email. I'm sure that you'll get the accurate information there. And we are adjourned.